what it says is, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation or punishment. And then it goes on to say, because rulers are not a terror of good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the soul in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. That is the most important passage in the Bible regarding the rights and the role of what is called the civil magistrate, that is the government of the state. And what is teaching, and remember this was written at a time when the Christians were under the heel of Roman dictatorship. What it is saying is that Christians should live within the law. Acts chapter 5 says we must obey God rather than men. When there is, verse 29, when there's a clash between what man commands and what God commands, we must disobey man's command and we must obey God's command. But where it is not a clash between God's command and the state's command, when it is simply a matter of what we prefer, then we are told we obey the powers that be. Now, the powers that be are called the minister of God. First of all, God is sovereign, and even the communists don't come to control without the sovereign will of God. Sometimes that is God's judgment. You take Russia, for instance. Russia became communist. That was the judgment of God. There had been a Christian church, quotes Christian church in Russia, for a long time. And it's still there today, the Greek or the Russian Orthodox Church. The Russian Orthodox Church and the Russian Tsars were an amalgamation of evil, of oppression, and of wickedness that necessitated that somebody was going to rise against them. And to this day, after communism has fallen, the greatest foes of Christians in Russia are the Russian Orthodox. They are persecuting them. They're trying to have them closed down, they're trying to have them put in jail, and at times they're succeeding. Now, I believe personally that the rise of communism there was God's judgment on apostate Christianity with all the oppression that it brought. It didn't come despite the will of God, it came through it. Interestingly, the Russian Baptists, the underground Baptists, they disobeyed the law. When the law said you're not going to meet as Christians, or you must be registered, and the communist government must give you what you're going to say and allow you what you're going to preach, they said, no, we don't owe our existence as churches to the state, and we will disobey the state in that. But in all other things, they were not. They were anti-communist in the sense that they believed the Bible, but they did not form political groups to oppose the government and try to overthrow it. Other people did that. They didn't do that. They believed that they were there to preach. Now, it didn't save their skin. Thousands of them were murdered. Thousands of pastors were murdered because they took this stand. But they were saying, we obey the powers that be. Now, the powers that be have certain requirements. They have to, and if they're going to do right, communists don't do this. But then again, even the U.S. government doesn't do this. They should recognize that they are ordained of God, that therefore they have a responsibility toward God. I don't know a government of a major country in the world today that is willing to recognize that. In fact, if a U.S. government recognized that, the Supreme Court would immediately say it was unconstitutional. But they should recognize that. Second, it is part of their duty to be a terror to evil and not to good works. As the U.S. Constitution puts it, the government should not hinder our free exercise of our religious beliefs and our religious practices. they should be a terror to evil works, but not to good works. Again, many a state is not willing to live up to that. Now you have the big question. Does a Christian ever have the right to rebel? Now, I'm going to give you a very much of a thumbnail sketch of what I think of as the Presbyterian doctrine of revolution. You see, the American Revolution would never have happened without the Presbyterians. Hope you know that. The Scotch-Irish were the backbone of the revolutionary forces. And that's just historical fact. And not a bit of wonder, they were the countrymen. They were your Davy Crockett's, for instance. Davy Crockett was a Scotch-Irish man. And a whole lot of other. They were the hard backwoodsmen, dour, stern, backbones like crowbars, and they're not going to be pushed around by anybody. And the question comes up, were they right or wrong? Was the American Revolution right or wrong? Was it legitimate? Or does this country now have to say, well, it's legitimate after all these years, but it was built on an illegitimate revolution? I believe it was legitimate. I think now you'll have to correct me. You go to Bob Jones, and most of you, and I don't, so you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think there were some history professors at BJ floated a very interesting theory that when the King of England imposed taxes on America, it was a tax that declared America really to be a foreign country. That tax should only be imposed in a foreign country. It was an excise duty. And therefore, by so doing, he made them foreigners, so they weren't guilty of rebellion anymore. They were simply throwing off a repressive dictatorship. That's an interesting theory. I think there's a much better way to justify the American Revolution. And that is that it's not only the supreme magistrates that are ordained of God, but all lower levels of magistrates. And the lower levels of magistrates to whom we are still subject, for instance, in Britain, the Parliament, not only the King, they have a right to govern. And in their relationship with these various levels of magistracy, the lower levels of magistrates can, because it's their duty and their right to do so, they can interpret the law honestly, and if their superiors are not doing so, they can rise up against them. That's what happened in America. You had legitimate rulers who were subject to the king, but when the king started abusing his power, they were maintaining the rightful power of the magistracy, and therefore they opposed it. I think that's a much better reason for revolution. But that's the only reason. What this is saying really is that a Christian is not to become an individualist, a terrorist, that sort of thing. There are right ways for opposing wrong governments, but their wrong does not give you any privilege to combat it with another wrong. One final thing. Many commentators believe that it is not simply the magistrate in power at the time that this is speaking of, but the office. In other words, we're not to be anarchists. We're to recognize the legitimacy of government, and recognizing that sometimes to maintain it, we have to, say, overthrow. Now, it doesn't really affect us that much here, in that the way you overthrow governments in the West is you vote. You have that right, and you are exercising not only a right and a privilege, but what is a responsibility for the direction of government. But those are the views that I think this passage is saying.